Walk the dogs, school drop-off, meetings from 10 to 3, take kids to soccer, then no time left for a jog.
When everyone else is relying on you, it's easy to put your needs last. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist online, so you can show up for yourself the way you do for others. Visit betterhelp.com/positive to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/positive.
T-Mobile's network can help keep you connected to all your favorite podcasts when you're out and about. Whether you're an early bird looking to dive into a daily news podcast or a night owl who wants to catch up on the latest reality TV drama, T-Mobile will keep you connected on their strong and reliable network. T-Mobile covers more highway miles with 5G than anyone. So if you need great coverage, especially when you're on the go, check out T-Mobile. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/CY. That's SEEWHY.
I just love pet peeve.
I tell producer Jay not to make me laugh, that we need to be serious on this show. No cackling, no giggling, no howling with gales of laughter. And he immediately turns and runs the opposite direction. Of course. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. It's my fault. I know. I subject myself to this torture. However, I want to be lean and not lumpy. And it's also great for flexibility. And I do believe that yoga has changed not just my fitness, but the way that I train. And so I'm going to keep doing it. But when she can actually assist us into going deeper in our poses, it causes me great agony. I'm telling you what, I leave her classes sometimes with more pain and more sore muscles than if I had just run 10 miles. Goodness. On Twitter, A-Law Radio. Good to connect with you on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Happy almost Friday if you're not quite there yet. I know because I don't sleep before the show, I sleep earlier during the daytime, and then I get up around 3:30 in the afternoon. This is still my Thursday night. We do have a bunch of people who do it the opposite, where they stay up all day, then they go to bed in the afternoon, the evening, they wake up and they come to work. So for them, it's their Friday morning, but that's not the way that I operate. So this is still my Thursday night until I get off in the morning, and then it's full speed ahead into the Friday and the weekend. So on Twitter, on our Facebook page, our phone number, 855-212-4227. We'll get back to basketball. We'll let you hear the reaction from the marathon opener of the East Finals in the Stanley Cup playoffs, won by the Panthers with 13 seconds to go in the fourth overtime. It was a quadruple overtime game to start that series, for heaven's sakes. In Denver, the Nuggets win the first two games of the West Finals in the NBA. And so we'll get back to both hoops and hockey playoffs as we are now getting closer and closer to knowing who the championship matchups will be. But even though it's mid-May, there are owners' meetings coming up in the NFL. We've got the second round of workouts. Mandatory OTAs are not that far away for NFL teams. Gosh, we've already got the mini camps for rookies in the rearview mirror. There's a lot happening, a lot below the surface that threatens to boil over. So we're pleased to welcome NFL insider and senior writer Armando Salguero from OutKick. Also can see him on Fox News now and then. And Armando, there's so much that we can talk about, but since you and I are in media, this will be fun to start with. When an athlete makes the transition from his playing career to media, whether radio or TV, I often will say to him, welcome to the dark side. Matt Ryan is the latest who makes this jump. He's going to work as an analyst for CBS and the NFL and CBS, but he says the door is not closed on his playing career. So why jump into a broadcast booth?
Because we all need jobs, Amy. We got to work. You got to feed the kids. You got to pay the mortgage. And, you know, Matt's no different than anybody else. Having said that, he is, I wouldn't say he's going kicking and screaming, but he's not going without giving up the game without a fight. He wants the door to be open. The way that I see this playing out is the only way that he is able to get back in the league is if a team that has a good amount of chance of being in the playoffs during the season and they have an injury to their starting quarterback and they need someone to come in and kind of save them at the very least towards the end of the season, even if it's not right away, because he's going to have to learn the system and so forth. Maybe at that point, that's the opening for him. But obviously, no one is beating down his door and saying, come be our starter, and compete during, or even compete during training camp. So it's a good idea that he is moving on to the next phase of his life, while still being able to keep the last phase of his life, which has been pretty great, open.
Honestly, I never thought of him as a great talker. And then I think about the fact that Tom Brady will also be jumping into broadcasting. Which of those two guys do you think will be the better broadcaster, just for fun, Armando? And then we'll go back and we'll replay this when they actually both get into the booth.
Yeah, no, I'm rooting for Matt Ryan, because Tom Brady has 7 rings and the other guy went up 28-3 and didn't win. So maybe post career, we can flip the script a little bit and Ryan comes out the superior broadcaster, and Brady kind of, like, it's hard for me to accept that Tom Brady's a good looking guy. He was married to a supermodel. Before that, he dated a movie star. He won 7 Super Bowls, and now he's going to be great at broadcasting too. Come on.
It's not right.
It's not fair to the rest of humanity.
All right, then. Matt Ryan and Carson Wentz are connected, of course, the 6 degrees of separation. Is there a future there for Carson? If there's no future for Matt Ryan, what about Carson Wentz?
Yeah, I think Carson Wentz's time as the starting quarterback in the NFL is over. And, he's got to hope that a team would be open to bringing him in, as a backup type. And again, in an emergency situation as a backup type, obviously he's not signed yet. I don't know if he'll be signed by the start of training camp. In short spurts, I think Carson Wentz is fine. From what we've seen of his career, he is capable, 3-4 games. It seems like teams find the magic formula for him, figure him out, and suddenly things go south. And that's the problem, or one of the problems that he's struggled with during his career. I'm pulling for him. I think he's a good person. He's young, and certainly he's staying in shape. So it's not – the last chapter on the Carson Wentz book has not been written. But obviously, it needs a little refreshing. It needs a little updating for it to get a little better.
We've seen, as is typical, a bunch of quarterbacks change teams. But we also saw several teams draft quarterbacks in the first round with the idea that they will be starting sooner rather than later. What are a couple fits between teams and QBs that you really like?
I like the Colts with Anthony Richardson. I was at the draft, and I was around Anthony Richardson, and he is an impressive dude. And I'm not talking physically, although you watch the tape, and physically he is a very impressive person as an athlete. I mean, he could do things. That guy ran away from the LSU secondary on like a 70-yard run last year. So you got to be some kind of athlete to be able to do that. But as a person, I just like his demeanor. I like his maturity. I like how he approaches things. Nothing seems to rattle him, which is going to serve him, by the way, his rookie year and beyond. And I like the fit in Indianapolis in that you've got Shane Steichen, who helped Justin Herbert and then helped develop Jalen Hurts. And so if you're talking about a QB developer with a QB that needs developing, I think that's a good marriage.
Armando Salguero is with us from Outkick. We're talking NFL. It might be mid-May, but it's never a dull moment in the National Football League. After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. It was interesting this week to hear Joe Burrow not only keep what he knows of the negotiations with the Bengals to himself, I do appreciate that, but he also did make the point that he doesn't need to break the bank if it hurts his team's ability to then go out and either re-sign or pick up competent pieces. Similar to, say, what the Chiefs have done around Patrick Mahomes. How does that work out when we're talking about astronomical amounts of money?
Well, first of all, it works out for Joe Burrow in that he's going to get an astronomical amount of money.
Yeah.
But it's pretty impressive that at 24 years old, 25 years old, he realizes that it's not all about him. He said very clearly this week, look, great quarterbacks can't be great quarterbacks without great players around them. You don't hear every single, you know, QB1 saying that. You hear a lot of QB1 saying, you know, I'll lift the team and, you know, the tide will rise for everybody. This guy realizes that even at his young age, that if he has a good support system, if he has players that are stars around him, he's going to be able to be a star. And he obviously does, because Ja'Marr Chase is a star. T. Higgins has been outstanding. Both of them are 1,000-yard receivers, and both of them are going to be paid and need to be paid. Chase obviously is going to be looking for an extension next year. Higgins needs a contract for next year. So the money has to be distributed in a way that Joe Burrow, I think, understands you can't really lose a whole bunch of guys and just keep going because I'm Joe Burrow and I'll make Joe Blow, the wide receiver, really great. No, that's not how it works. And you got to kind of bow to the fact that he realizes that.
The Giants, they had to make a choice between signing their quarterback and franchise tagging their running back, which is what they ended up doing. What is the latest with Saquon Barkley? Would they like to give him a contract if they could figure out common ground?
Saquon has turned down a couple of offers already. They want to sign him to a contract because right now they have him on a franchise tag, which, by the way, he hasn't signed yet. But nonetheless, it's costing the Giants $10 million in cap space. If they can sign him to a long-term contract, they probably are going to save a good amount of cap space the first couple of years. They have an interest in doing that. It probably would be in Saquon Barkley's best interest to do that. But he's got apparently a number in his head, and it's north of $14 million a year. Right now, the highest paid running back in the NFL is Christian McCaffrey, and I think he's no higher than $15 or $16 million a year. It's pretty clear where Saquon Barkley is aiming. He wants to be at the top of the heap. Obviously, they need to come to some sort of agreement. Otherwise, Saquon's not going to show up for, you know, this offseason until he needs to, and I don't know how he's going to handle training camp.
Let's talk about Dalvin Cook, because this one kind of blows me away. What's the latest with him and the Vikings?
Yeah, Dalvin Cook is from South Florida, and I'm from South Florida, and I love Dalvin Cook. I understand that the Vikings don't want a running back with a $14 million cap hit. And I think it goes to $15 million next year.
Wow.
And I understand that this year, or last year rather, he had his lowest yards per carry average of his career. But it wasn't like terrible. It was 4.4 yards a carry. And, you know, I saw him run through that Buffalo defense on the way to a 65-yard touchdown for Minnesota. So he is still a dynamic player. They've asked him to take a pay cut. He told them, no, thank you. I don't think I want to do.
No, thank you.
No, thanks. They've talked trade with some teams. As far as I know, those teams have been calling the Vikings. I'm not sure whether the Vikings are calling those teams. And so far, nothing. I think that most teams believe the Vikings will be forced to cut Dalvin Cook. And if Dalvin Cook is on the market in June, or July, you know, someone is going to decide not to give him $14 million a year, but at the very least, they are going to do better than what the Vikings were offering to do in a pay cut.
Still so much happening, even though it's mid-May. Armando Salguero is with us from OutKick. It's After Hours, CBS Sports Radio. The Commanders are at least in agreement for a sale, $6.05 billion. That's a billion with a B, billion dollars. What do you think, Armando, a change in D.C. with the ownership of that football team could mean, not just for the franchise, but for the league?
Relief. They don't have to worry about the next shoe to drop coming from one of their legacy franchises. You got to remember, once upon a time, the Washington franchise, back when they were called the Redskins, were a premier franchise. They won a bunch of Super Bowls under Joe Gibbs. You know, they had star players, the Hogs, John Riggins, Daryl Green, all of that. And they were on Thanksgiving against the Cowboys, and they were on Monday nights, and they were on Sunday nights. And all of a sudden, in the last 15, 20 years or so, it's just different. It's not that. They're not it anymore. And they just shoot themselves in the foot. And so all the time, it seems. And, of course, there is that stuff about the congressional investigations and so forth.
Right.
And the Mary Jo White investigation. NFL ownership is relieved that Daniel Snyder won't be the owner of that team any longer. The NFL is meeting next week for their annual summer meeting. They're not going to vote on the Washington Commanders sale. So it's too early for that. But my guess is before this season begins, they will be under new ownership. And beyond that, the next step will be getting them back to D.C., I think. They want to be close to the footprint of the old RFK Stadium, is something that has legs. I think the local government is offered to put up $1 billion. It's going to cost way more than $1 billion to build a stadium there. But nonetheless, it's a new day for that team. It's a refresh that I think everyone is happy to see.
The league is certainly synonymous with cash. I mean, it is a golden goose when it comes to cash flow with revenue. The latest is this deal for $110 million with NBC Universal to put two whole games on the Peacock Network, including a wild card game next January. Armando, I've asked my listeners, and a lot of them say they're maxed out when it comes to streaming services. Some of them say they're not going to pay for a streaming service simply to watch a playoff game. What's your reaction to this migration more and more in the NFL and other sports to moving to streaming services?
Yeah, they're moving to widen their ability to make money, get new eyes on the product. And they're happy to do it with Amazon, with Peacock, with YouTube, as you know.
Right.
It's the future, and I don't see how it's going to change. I think that, you know, the cow has left the barn, or the horse has left the barn. Some farm animal has left the barn.
The chicken.
The barn is empty, and some farm animal is out in the field watching a streaming service. Okay? And so that has happened, and neither you nor I in the barn, you know, trying to pick up after those dang animals is going to change that.
Do they care about how many animals are watching their streaming service? Do they care about the numbers?
Of course they care. And that's the reason that they tried at the spring meetings, they being the NFL owners, to institute changes to the Thursday night Amazon Prime schedule, to where now teams can appear more than once during a season. And there was even a movement afoot to try to, you know, at the end of the year, to have the schedule be able to flex those games. Because at the end of last year, some of those Thursday night games were just bad matchups between teams that were very disappointing. And, you know, the audience share showed that. So they're trying to do things that will prevent and will kind of keep those streaming services from balking at the price that they're paying. They want to give them premier matchups while at the same time, you know, serving their traditional television partners.
Even now in 2023, the NFL is attempting to reinvent itself and doing so with fistfuls of cash. All right, you can find Armando Salguero on Twitter with exactly that. And I think that you should be able to spell it exactly as it sounds. Right, Armando?
Yes, yes. As it's spelled in Nebraska, Salguero, like they spell it in Nebraska.
You make me laugh. We always laugh. He is the senior NFL writer for OutKick, and it's our privilege to have him here on the show. Gracias, mi hermano.
Anytime, Amy. My pleasure. Y bendiciones.
It's always good to laugh, although right now it hurts me. But great stuff with Armando. From Matt Ryan to Carson Wentz to Saquon Barkley and Dalvin Cook. What about the Dalvin Cook revelations? I actually did not take it seriously that the Vikings and Cook be headed for divorce, but it sounds more probable now than not. Can you imagine the number of teams that would be more than willing to pitch him with a free agent deal? All of our conversations are podcasted separately. So you can do that, find that, share that, listen to it again. By the time we get through with the show, you're moments away from being able to access the podcast in its entirety. And we always post it on our show Twitter, After Hours CBS, or our Facebook page every weekday morning. Coming up, we've got some of the reaction from the Panthers' quadruple overtime victory in the first game. The first game. They've already played 2.5 games, for heaven's sakes. But in the first game of the Eastern Conference Finals in Raleigh between Panthers and Canes, it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
It for the Carolina Hurricanes. Up for Natchez, dropped off Teravainen, left circle Teravainen, touche, a shot, a save, Bobrovsky, rebound, oh, what a save, Sergei Bobrovsky, as Aho was knocking on the door for that rebound, and Sergei Bobrovsky makes a right pad save and covers, and with 1:10 to play in the fourth overtime, we continue on here in Raleigh. And now Ekblad will take over the neutral zone as the Hurricanes couldn't advance it. Ekblad dumps it in down to our right. Here's Brent Burns, keeps it to the outside. Sam Bennett keeps it in out front. Tkachuk, a shot. He scores! He scores! Matthew Tkachuk, the overtime winner! The Panthers take game 1-3-2. The final, Matthew Tkachuk ends the marathon, and the Panthers go home happy tonight here in Raleigh.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Ooh, it took all of Sergei Bobrovsky and actually all of Freddie Anderson for them to get to the late stages, the very late stages of a fourth overtime. But in quadruple OT with a few seconds to go, Matthew Tkachuk off a turnover is able to take that putt and just turn and fire it toward Freddie Anderson. And it slides by him to the left, I think, if I've seen the highlight a couple of times. Doug Plagans with the calls on the Florida Panthers radio network. So, yes, Matthew Tkachuk mercifully ends it for these two teams who have to turn around in under 48 hours and get back on the ice for game two. But what a moment for him.
Probably my favorite one so far in my life. Big to not let it go to five overtimes there. But so many great contributions from everybody. Like, just looking at this sheet quickly, I mean, Monty played 60 minutes almost. Barkey took like 1,000 draws. I mean, I don't know. Like, it was like, we're not even in overtime if Bob doesn't make that save on the breakaway in the third. So Bob played great. Everybody followed. Total team effort for two games, basically.
It kind of becomes the game of attrition. You're just trying to be patient and wait for the moment and for the shot, one shot at a time. You don't think too much ahead. You're just staying with the moment and trying to do your to do the best to give to keep the puck out of the net.
Fourth overtime, and they nearly played into a fifth, as you hear with Matthew Tkachuk. There were only 13 seconds remaining in quadruple overtime. Sergei Bobrovsky, 63 saves. And that's what you hear from him with the war of attrition. This is the sixth longest game in NHL history. And it was back and forth, but you could see, congratulations to you if you watched the entire thing. I had to listen to a bunch of it in the radio because I was driving into our CBS Sports Radio studios. But at the beginning, extremely physical. As the minutes mounted and the time wore on and the overtimes piled up, they were less and less physical and there was less and less checking. In fact, there was less and less contact. There were no penalties, at least not in the last three overtimes. I don't think there was a power play in the first OT as well, or even. There was just less and less contact and the game was played pretty cleanly. But as you can imagine, these guys have heavy legs and tired legs and they're getting wobbly. And even if they are eating, right? So doing what they can in between to refuel, obviously drinking Gatorade and water and everything else. At some point, you're just exhausted. And they actually looked like they were headed for a fifth overtime. But Tkachuk is able to end it with about 13 seconds to go. Sixth longest game in NHL history. And here's something else about the Panthers. We talked about their ability to answer. It reminds me of the Miami Heat. This is what I was saying last night on the show and what I put on Twitter. The Miami Heat always have an answer. They may not always win, but they always have a response. And so do the Panthers. Seven straight road wins in these playoffs, and they're 5-0 in overtime. And that includes a couple of games against the Bruins, if I remember correctly. They always have an answer. But, yeah, after two-plus games, now they have to turn around and play game two again on Saturday night. Freddie Anderson, by the way, finished with, only 57 saves. So between the two goaltenders, there were 120 saves. That's total insanity. But Rob Brind'Amour wants to make sure you don't forget about the other goalie.
He was great. I mean, they definitely had plenty of chances to, score. And he kept us in there and gave us a chance.
So you're saying there's a chance. That's a lot. We've got Panthers who are an 8 seed, right, who barely made it into the playoffs. If the Pittsburgh Penguins are taking care of their business at the end of the regular season, the Panthers likely aren't in it. So that's in the NHL. In the NBA, we still have a 7 seed and an 8 seed. And the Miami Heat, now they should have been a 7 seed, as you pointed out last night. They lose their opener in the play-in tournament. And so they turn out as the 8 seed. But I would say this is pretty incredible. In three of the conference final series that we still have remaining, right, in hoops and hockey, we've got three teams that are 7 or 8 seeds. That doesn't happen every year, Marco.
No, I'd have to look. Off the top of my head, I can't think of another time that we've had that. I mean, an 8 seed just to get into the conference finals in the NBA has only happened the second time. So obviously that's not something that you see every day. Hockey, you see it a little bit more often, but still, to be able to make the run that they're making, I mean, the Panthers, look, last year was a difficult year.
Sure.
President's Trophy, bounced early, able to regroup and make a run now. So some of the talent was there, but still, I mean, obviously being able to do what they did, it's impressive, but still a long way to go.
So we do obviously have a 1 seed in the NBA. We have a 2 seed in the NBA too, but I like it. People talk about how, it's rigged or it always goes according to seeds or it's boring. Oh, not this year. We've had all kinds of drama and it's been upside down and topsy-turvy. But as you point out, you are still talking about teams that maybe they dealt with injuries. Maybe they just had a really tough stretch. In the case of the Lakers, they retooled half their lineup at the trade deadline. And the formula, it didn't really work until after they put in different pieces.
I mean, this is almost a totally different team compared to what they were by the, not even the beginning of the season, by the All-Star break. I mean, it's a totally different team. And the Heat went through so many ups and downs, yes, and so many different lineup configurations and so many injuries. And one thing that we all kind of forget, that Tyler Hero is still not playing.
Right.
You know, so they're still missing some, obviously a big piece, but they went through a lot too. So sometimes it's, you know, you're talking about the Lakers and the Heat. This was the NBA Finals just a few years ago. There's talent there. Now, the Lakers are almost not even the same team from a couple of years ago, minus two very big important pieces. Mm-hmm. But the Heat, again, going through a lot of different stuff. So they're not necessarily like a typical 7-8 seed, but still, to do what they're doing is still impressive.
How's your wife?
Still hanging in. Still good. Any day. Any day.
Aww.
Let's put it this way. We're not going longer than another week.
Okay, so
we've already been scheduled for next Friday.
At the very most, we have you for one more week, but we hope not. For your sake, for your family's sake.
I mean,
for your wife's
whatever,
sake.
As long as, yeah, I think she's good with, you know, if now or, you know, next Friday. She's all right either way. She's just more, like, uncomfortable with other things. Her hands hurt, her back hurts, like those kinds of things. But, yeah, so worst case scenario is next Friday. If not, we'll wind up a little earlier than that. So we'll find out.
How long will you take to spend with your new bundle?
The paternity, I'm getting 2 weeks when he's born.
Okay.
And then...
Oh, it's okay. I didn't know if I should reveal that he was a boy.
Oh,
it's
fine.
He is a son.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, this will break the tie. So now I have two boys and a girl.
Break the tie.
Yeah. So I'll get 2 weeks from then, and then I'll come back, and then, you know, sparingly I'll take little times off, you know, when they go back to school, you know, things like that, just to... try to figure things out, because I'll be fair. Three is going to be kind of like, I almost feel like I'm juggling now. Like, okay, like, what are we doing? So we'll figure it out as we go, which is basically what I did through the other two, and I still do it daily because I don't know what I'm doing.
Yes. How are your son and daughter reacting to another sibling?
Yeah, my son's, he's fine. He's going to be 9, so it's a little easier. He knows what's going on. He went through it the first time. He gets it. I'll be fair. He's a little bit too much like me, probably, because when I had to tell him that he's having another sibling, and, you know, at the time I didn't know it was a boy, but we're having another one, his reaction was, I was like, bud, you don't seem, you know, he was so excited when we had my daughter, and he just kind of looked at me, and again, he's my son. He went, I got to tell you, I thought we were good.
That's what he said.
That's exactly what he said. I laughed, and in my head I went, you're right, we were, but, so he's good, he's fine, he's older. I'm a little concerned about my daughter because she's only going to be 3. This will be a little bit of a shock to her, but see how she reacts.
Have you tried explaining it to her?
Yeah, she keeps saying, you know, we're going to have a baby boy, but she doesn't know exactly what that means. I don't think she gets the concept. You know, I'm going to have a brother, but I don't think she understands. Aww. She knows she has a brother, but I don't think she grasps. Same thing with my son was 6 when we had my daughter. You know, I don't think he understood the idea that, like, you know, babies don't do anything. So he was kind of like, you know, when's she going to, like, be cool? When's she going to be fun? And now he realizes that, you know, another baby's going to come. He's like, yeah, by the time that they are cool, like, I don't care anymore. He's like, I'm going to go off and do my own thing.
You know, he's older. He's going to be a great big brother.
He's good with all that stuff. That, yeah, yes. No, he's kind of like another parent now. So it's all right.
Wow. Got some helps there.
Yeah, I put him to work. I'm not going to lie.
So kids are for. That's what kids are for. Well, that's awesome. So I hope for your sake that it's smooth and doesn't have to be an induction, but we will miss you, of course. I feel like I have to say goodbye every time I see you just in case.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You never know. Because, I mean, like to be honest, I thought we were going to go last week. There was a couple of times that my wife really thought. Aww. She was like, oh, I think we're there. So you never know. And you know what? I have left my phone in the other room like an idiot. It wouldn't shock me.
Wait, would you get up in the middle of an update?
Well, I think I can handle 2 minutes.
You think you can finish the update?
I wouldn't finish the rest of the shift, but no. I think I can finish the update itself.
All right. That's good to know. Just in case that all of a sudden you disappear in the middle of a show, we know where you went.
Correct. Okay. I will try to let you know as I'm running out the door. But yeah,
send me a text.
I got a decent ride to get back to be able to take care of everything. So yeah, the faster I get out the door, the faster.
Oh no.
The better.
No
it is.
Need to explain. That's amazing. All right. So Marco Belletti about to be a dad again, which is awesome. We'll see how long we have him here into next week. Maybe not at all. But while he's here, we're going to put him to work.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Confident. I feel good. It's been a great year. It's been an amazing year. And I'm just hoping to keep adding more to it. It's been a lot of fun, and hopefully I can keep riding that wave.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
John Rahm is certainly a favorite, one of the best players in the world, but certainly a favorite to win the PGA Championship taking place this week in Rochester, New York. Now, they did not get through the first round. I'm not sure if you saw this or not. For those of you who wake up early, so if this is your wheelhouse and you're normally awake at this time, maybe you did see it on Thursday morning. They actually had to suspend play or postpone the first groups off the tee at Oak Hill in Rochester, New York, because they had frost on the ground. So the ground was, it was covered. It was white. The photos are pretty incredible. So they had to push back the first tee times almost 2 hours in Rochester. Thankfully for upstate New York, Western New York, it's not supposed to be quite as chilly on Friday morning. In fact, right now it's 50 degrees at Oak Hill Country Club, but it was down below freezing. And so there were a lot of places that were dealing with it in the Northeast and then on up into not just Western New York, but certainly the Upper Plains and the northern half of the United States was feeling a cold snap. I know that I was wearing a winter coat, a lightweight winter coat, as well as hat and gloves to walk the dog on Thursday morning because it was in the 30s in my neighborhood. So the PGA Championship start was delayed, and then they never were able to finish that first round. So they still have golfers that have to get out there and finish their first round before they can move on to the second. When we talk about the lead right now, I could say to you, American Eric Cole, thing is, he's not done. So the clubhouse lead, the guys who are into the clubhouse already, include Bryson DeChambeau, who's sitting a stroke off Eric Cole's pace. Again, he's at minus five, but he still has a handful of holes in his first round. Bryson's done with his first round, and so he is the clubhouse leader, sitting at minus four with Scottie Scheffler and Dustin Johnson among the two who are just a stroke behind. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. I can imagine with Cole playing as well as he was, seeing his name atop the leaderboard, he probably didn't want to stop. Of course, they ran into darkness. They couldn't finish up. But yeah, this is a new thing for this American.
It's nice. I like it a lot. I whenever you play, you want to, you know, compete to win. And that's a name, that's a spot I like like to see my name at. And hopefully it is there more often.
From Delray Beach, Florida. And I would say this. He's 34 years old. He's young in terms of the number of majors that he's had under his belt, right? This is not a name that you hear all the time. He's got no wins on the PGA Tour. He turned pro in 2009. And he's only actually played in 23 events on the PGA Tour. He's made roughly half of the cuts. So 12 of 23. He's got a couple of top five finishes. He once finished runner up. But this is not a guy who has got a ton of experience out there. Certainly not in majors. But that's the beauty of the PGA Tour. It's typically wide open. Really open. So it'd be kind of fun if he was able to pull off the stunner. And the PGA Championship, again, is one of those times where you'll see guys come out of nowhere and win. So good for Eric Cole, able to see his name atop the leaderboard. But a lot of the attention is on Bryson DeChambeau, and not necessarily on the fact that he's sitting at minus four and has the clubhouse lead. Do you guys remember during the pandemic when Bryson holed up in his house and decided he wanted to put on 50 pounds of pure muscle? Do you remember we were calling him Beefy Bryson? He looked like a completely different person. He had gone from lean and lanky, more of a beanpole, to a beefcake. And he wanted to overpower golf courses. But I guess he's decided that wasn't healthy. And come to find out, he was doing something that he shouldn't have been to his body. And I'll let him explain it, only because he looks like a completely different guy now. He's slimmed down. He's dropped a ton of weight. He's not the same Bryson.
I took a Zoomer peptide test, which essentially tells you what inflames your blood when you eat it. So, like, I was allergic to corn, wheat, gluten, dairy, pretty much everything I liked, I couldn't eat, right?
Ew.
So I took that out. I started taking that out in August, and over the course of time, I've just lost all this inflammation, lost a lot of fat, and just slimmed down like crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty funny to see him, because if you didn't know it was Bryson, you might not recognize him. Get this. He lost 18 pounds in 24 days after he started this diet in August. Again, does not sound healthy, but maybe what he was losing was all unhealthy. He weighs now between 210 and 215, but he was, in order to maintain his beefiness, he was consuming 5,000 calories a day. Now he's down to under 3,000. And he's cut a lot of different foods out of his diet.
Slimmed down like crazy.
And now here he is sitting at -4 in the PGA Championship.
It's a fantastic round of golf at Oak Hill. It's a prestigious place, very difficult golf course. As I was looking at it throughout the week, I'm like, man, I don't know how shooting under par is even possible out here in some of the golf holes. But luckily I was able to play some really good golf, hit a lot of fairways, do my job and make some putts.
Because he's leaner now, he has more speed on his swing. And even though he doesn't have the same weight to put behind it, he's still driving the ball exceedingly well and far, top 10 in the PGA, because he can generate more speed on his swing. He also changed his equipment. He changed his caddy. He tweaked his swing. So it's a new look and new and improved Bryson DeChambeau, who's now part of the LIV Tour, not the PGA Tour. But is sitting at -4, the clubhouse leader after most of the opening round of the PGA Championship. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
Attention listeners.
I'm pleased to announce that Radio Rental is returning for another installment of Terrifying Tales. If you happen to be new here, I'm Terry Carnation, current proprietor of the Radio Rental Video Store, where I possess a collection of the scariest true stories you've ever heard, all told by real people. Mark your calendars for... Oh, apparently it's available right now. I'm a little late with this promo.
Listen for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Surgeons keep our hearts beating. They do the amazing, help save lives, and so can you. Your CSL plasma donation can help create 24 critical life-saving medicines that can give grandpa the chance for his heart to swell when he meets his new grandson, or give a bride the chance for her heart to skip a beat on her wedding day. Every plasma donation helps more than you know. Do the amazing, help save lives. Donate today at your local CSL plasma center and be rewarded for your generosity.